Edit.
Button is hit.
Okay, we're live. All right, welcome to the inaugural first episode of The Irreverent. Yay!
Woo!
All right, thanks. All right, so I'm Gavin. I'll be hosting today's episode. If you guys want to introduce yourselves, oh, we'll go to my right. Go ahead.
What should I introduce?
Just yourself, who you are.
Nothing about I'm Talis.
Obviously.
I'm Talis. I'm a student. My pronouns are he, they. I'm 22. Do we want to get into the richness?
Okay.
That's it then.
Hi, guys. My name is T-H-I, but the H and I are just there to say hi. I am 26 as of about a week and a half ago, and happy to be here.
Well, same birthday.
Wow.
So I'm the old guy here. That's why I'm here.
What's your
old
name?
Head?
Oh, Sylvester.
Okay, old guy.
That's it?
That's it.
All right.
I mean, we'll get to know each other more later on.
Okay. So. All right. So, yeah, I just wanted to lead with personal introductions. I think a lot of the times it's important to know the who behind the what of what we're doing. So let's get into it. So my topic today is on just general identity, personal identity, and societal labels. So I don't know. Does anyone want to just start talking before I say what I wanted to say?
I say you go for it.
All right, I'll go for it.
Yeah, I think we need to know a little bit more about that.
Okay, so I wanted to lead with like theories of identity because I like philosophy a lot. So I did a little research on just overall general identity theory, which is a little weird because we'll get into it. So the four main ones that are current and past that have been used and built upon are bodily identity theory, soul theory, memory theory, and psychological continuity theory. So I guess we'll just go one by one. So bodily identity theory suggests that a person's identity is tied to their physical body. As long as the same body is like present, then the person remains the same.
Hmm.
Pretty interesting thoughts, opinions, feelings.
I mean, I kind of feel that identity is tied to someone's body the same way that a plant is tied to the soil. You know, like you can unpluck it and put it into a different soil, put it into a potted plant. You can transfer it, cut a sapling. The plant still exists even without the soil. You kind of exist in your body. You interact with your body, and it helps shape who you become. It helps shape the nutrients, metaphysically speaking, I guess, that you get. But no, I wouldn't say that the body is the identity at all. I'd say that it's symbiotic to identity at best.
Mm. Any other thoughts?
I mean, body can certainly form identities, or like it can inform who you are, but I don't think it's tied to like defining, you know. It's not the speaker of identity, it's just a player within it.
Are you actually asking about our body as the kind of spring point of identity, or
that's not where I was going, but we could.
That's
what
I was
saying.
What were you going for?
Well, I was just going to go down the list one by one, talk about it.
The first one is body.
The first one is body. It's like the most basic.
That's hard for me because I come from a generation where there was a time when talking about your body is a shameful thing, or even considered a sinful thing. Not only a simple, a sinful thing. I come from that generation. I don't believe in it. I consider myself pretty liberal, but I can't delete that part of the past, of the old people's generations, which actually what hinders them, us, in opening up because of that limitations. And it's probably religious-based, culture-based. Mm. But yeah, like, the body is a sacred thing, but the sacred thing is not really a sacred thing about like nature sacred thing, but more like religious sacred thing. And different religion have their own. Like you go to the Middle East, they cover your body to honor your body, but it only applies to women. So it's a very interesting thing. But when you come to the West, the women are a little bit more freer to express their way of what they think about their body, but still under the microscope of religion and patriarchy, basically. So I don't know what to say when it comes to that part.
Absolutely. I do think that an interesting comment to be made about the list that you've presented is that while everything is kind of like shaped by culture in terms of like the soul, the body, all that sort of thing, cultural identity is, I think, very much a central facet to a lot of what build people into themselves. And I think I forgot to mention pronouns earlier because I'm not really used to it. I am she, her. I'm a trans woman. So admittedly, I have a bit of a bias against the body identity theory just because my body very literally did not fit me. And I just, there's a lot of other examples of that that come to mind. And for a lot of it, I think that identity is very much defined by its own identity, even if it comes from the body, you know? Like, I wouldn't have known what was wrong and what didn't fit if I didn't have the body to compare it to versus the self that I felt. Yeah. But at the same time, it's not quite the same to say that, like, I would still be a trans woman if I wasn't having hormone replacement. That isn't to say that I wouldn't prefer hormone replacement. It's just that that aspect of my identity not fitting with my body would remain.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's just kind of like a hard drive scenario, right? Like if you, and I see the mind as a very, there's a lot of sacredness, there's a lot of naturality to it, but there's also a lot of what I consider sort of a, not artificiality, but like a proceduralness to it. Like evolution is a lot like an algorithm just trying to figure out what works and how survival works and then just going off of that. It's not intelligent design, but it still kind of has that procedure. So for me, I do a lot of comparisons between like how the brain works and how a person works and how a machine works. And in this case, my first thought is like, if you download a program off of one computer, you can destroy that old computer, upload the program somewhere else. It's still the same program. There's been changes. It's no longer in the same hardware. But that doesn't mean that, you know, it's a completely new, completely separate, completely distinct thing just because the body of it has changed.
And the program is the consciousness.
In this case, yeah.
That's the perfect segue to soul theory. So in a sense, so soul theory is that the identity is linked to the soul or the spirit of the person, regardless, like religion and spirituality aside, like the essence of the being of the person is linked to that, which in tandem with memory theory argues that personal identity is based on psychological continuity. So in the sense that memory is the key to who a person is, if that makes sense. So if a person remembers past experiences, they're considered the same person as those experiences, which I think is very interesting.
I actually have a, I don't know if it's a hot or cold take, but I think it depends a lot on personal choice, right? Because like if, again, if we're going back to like the computer that got destroyed and somebody re-uploaded all the programs, it has all the same data, everything else, if it's a being capable of choice, I think you can decide if you identify as the same thing. If you want to do a new name because the old you has died, that's a fine thing to do. And, you know, we also get into the concept of memory. Like memory in and of itself is a very hazy thing. It's neurons interlacing to create fuzzy imprints, and they grow and they shape themselves. But we don't remember everything exactly the way it happened. That's also shaped by who we are and how we choose to remember things.
Yeah, and also children aren't blank slates. Because I think that would be what the memory thing would involve. Is like if memories is the like center of identity, then children would be blank slates and they wouldn't have much personalities. But that is not the case. Children are very, usually very personable and very like determined. You know what I mean? Like, if a child wants to play on the playground, is sociable and is extroverted, they're usually just that way. It's not because they have memories necessarily tied to it. They just enjoy it.
What if you have memories from a past life? That's why he's referring to.
But then that's memory. That's still non-memory memory, you know?
It's encoding.
I think, and that one kind of gets into the spirituality versus, I guess, kind of to the spirit of the soul identity versus the memory identity. It's the
what I understood from his question.
Yeah, so spirituality versus the like physicality of it, right? Like memories as like neural connections in your brain, the shape of how your brain has developed versus the soul theory of like there is something deeper that kind of encodes those experiences.
So which one is it?
I think, again, firstly, it's a little bit choice dependent. And secondly, I do think that on this one, we kind of hit a wall because there is really no confirmed way to know. Even just on this hard science side, we have no confirmed way to know exactly how the brain encodes anything. We're getting closer and closer. We're figuring a lot more of it out.
Is there proof that we have a soul?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I mean, you brought it up. So that was the main, you know, you used the word soul.
I tried to take it more from the philosophy side of things. So a lot of times you philosophers often mix religion, spirituality, and philosophy. So I was just coming from that, but I didn't really do any research into...
In a philosophical sense, I think that it's more the concept of a person than it is a, like, energy being or a, like, ghost in this particular example. But there actually have been people who've tried to find out. I mean, there are people who, like, would measure a body to a certain specificity to see when you die, does the body get a little lighter of the soul leaving?
Yeah.
Obviously, we've seen things with, like, the Dalai Lama and other Hindu cultures where reincarnation is a very big thing, and you can... quote unquote, identify people based on, you know, hey, this was my toy in a past life. You bring a series of items placed in front of them. So I think fundamentally, if we're going into like the hard evidence side of things, we just don't have enough of it.
Okay. Now I can see what you're doing.
It's just there's a lot of mystery still left in the universe, and there's a lot of stuff that's just hard to understand from a human perspective that we're still working on.
Yeah.
But if we go through, I mean, if we just a little bit, kind of set on your idea of soul identity, and if we give it a benefit of the doubt, then we can say that maybe our past life is influencing our present life.
Absolutely,
it could. It's possible.
It is possible, but I think that we also get into the issue of like it's kind of impossible to know how. Like, for example, I exist in this place, to the best of my perception, as a being of meat and tissue. My thoughts are, even if they're influenced by other things, they are encoded in chemicals. They are encoded in neural pathways. They are encoded in muscle. So without that, how much of that is still me? Like, it's you can say that a soul is like a wider concept, and a piece of it is coming down and connecting to this meat body and then going back up. You can say that it's... born when the meat body is born and it turns into something else, the meat body is gone. So even kind of getting into the concept of a soul, again, we run into culture and we run into identity in how do you define personally what a soul would be? Do you consider yourself part of a higher being? You know, are you part of Buddha, reincarnating endlessly as part of this grand cycle until you can escape it? Are you a creation from a who knows how many millions or billions of years ago from Yahweh, who's kind of molding each and every soul individually and knows each and every one of them, and they get one life and then they get transported up to heaven or wherever else gets decided. That again comes back to culture and how we identify our souls, what we identify soul as.
I think often there's a link to the soul and the unconsciousness too, of like even beyond reincarnation, because I do think the soul is talked about in many, many different ways, related to an identity in many different ways. But one of like the more scientific ways is the consciousness and unconsciousness. And the soul would be in the realm of the unconscious, which is an interesting thing when tied to identity, because that means if in the soul consciousness theory, that identity is truly an unconscious thing, if it is tied to soul.
Yeah.
Something completely out of our control.
Yeah, I would actually argue that that kind of hits a little deeper on it in the sense that, again, I feel like such a nerd here, but I'm kind of coming back at it from a math perspective of, you know, you make an equation long enough and complicated enough and put enough variables into it, and it gets very easy to lose track of what specific pieces are doing what thing to create a certain outcome. And I think that if the outcome is the person, the outcome is the being, then every single part of that equation kind of ties into what you mean by unconsciousness, you know? Mm-hmm. It's going a little bit into memory. It's going a little bit into how you perceive yourself. It's going into a little bit into the physical sensations and the senses that you get interacting with the rest of the world.
Yeah. I think in general, when people talk about this, when you read about it, there's a very materialistic view of, we try to rationalize like the irrational thing that is just existing. Mm-hmm. And we try to relate it. Like you were talking about earlier about like the, we're just like meat and tissue and neurological connections and all that. And I think that that's a way that we rationalize it.
Or simplify.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we can try to understand it.
But that's kind of where I disagree, because I don't think that that's simple at all. You know, I think that that's part of, and again, I am coming at this from a bias. I don't disbelieve in any religion particularly. I just have never felt particularly called to any of them or particularly engaged. But I look into things with what I like to call a positive nihilism, which is that nothing matters, so the choices matter. If there is no intrinsic value to things, then the value that we put on things is what it's measured by, you know? So it's like, oh, you're just meat and neurons and tissue. Okay, yeah, that's a bit of a reductive way to do it. Or iron, which was only born in the heart of a star, spent billions of years spinning into a single little dust ball, which spent billions of years more turning into a crazy weird soup that can now look at itself. And that's a beautiful thing too. You know, it's not to say that the physicality or the materialism of it is reductive. It can be, and it is often used that way. But I think that there is beauty and wonder and something, for want of a better word, divine, just in existence, whatever shape it takes.
Yeah. Do you want to say something? No?
Sorry that we kind of diverted a little bit
fine. That's kind of...
We'll come back to it.
So. Yeah. So, yeah. And then the last one is cycle. Again, these are all very, like, one-sentence summaries. There's a lot of work. You can go read about it. Psychological continuity theory, which expands on the memory theory. So, essentially, personal identity is based on a broader range of psychological connections, like beliefs, dreams, and personality traits, which is where the question of like kids as a blank slate comes in. I think that's the connection there, is that kids in general, or people, I think, which we'll get into it when we start moving into labeling and stuff, that people are very susceptible to not only manipulation, but boxing themselves into a certain belief or desire or trait, and they latch onto that, and that becomes their identity.
Is that a self-boxing, or is somebody else boxing them in?
It could be both.
Okay.
I would say, overall, it's probably someone else, okay. But I think that people can find that in themselves. But then even then, you put yourself there, and that is who you are.
Human. I think somebody else can build the box, but only you can put yourself into it at a certain point.
Mm. And also that comes back to the idea that humans are very drawn to labels and explanations, or even simplifications.
Is it? Really, as us humans, or is it as society?
That's a pretty good question. Mm-hmm. I think that humans have a lot of desire to understand things, mm-hmm. and labels can be helpful with that. But mm-hmm. I think that focus on labeling yourself is more societal.
The reason I'm asking is because we literally came from living in a cave, going out, getting something to eat, come back, living in a cave. And now we're arguing about, or not.
And now we have
we're
to pay taxes.
Continuity, and yeah, how do we get from that simplicity of existence? I don't know if you call that simplicity, but how do we get from that existence to, you know, fake news or identity?
I mean, what's interesting choices. About language? Mm-hmm. That's how I'm going to try and like process this, is even in the definition of language, when you think about it, it's about labeling, definitions, and what things are. How the entirety of how we communicate is based on language. And so there are certain definitions mm-hmm. and things that are defined outside those definitions. So like this was explained once in like an English class, of like an apple is defined by being an apple, but it's also defined because it's everything that is not an apple. It's not a banana. It's not a sphere. It's not anything else. It's its own thing that's different than everything else, and that's what a definition is. And so when we come to labels, and humans are, like, we have this intensely intricate and, like, diverse language that is so specific and so rhetorical, and it can get so complicated because we want to figure out all those little intricacies. That's like at the basis of what language does.
But how do we get there? How did we get there?
So on
are we getting away from
anthropology?
No.
It's all interrelated, baby. It's all connected. On a mechanical level, there are certain neurological patterns that humans are built on that have allowed us to survive. And again, I come back to nature as the first AI programmer, right? Because, and this is a bit of a metaphor, bear with me for a second. Once upon a time, they had an AI model and they told it, here's a 3D mapping thing, make the fastest model, make a model that can get to the finish line as fast as possible. And one of the first models it made was a static tower with no moving parts.
Are you sure you're not quoting Isaac Asimov?
No, I promise I'm not. The reason that it made this static tower with no moving pieces, it couldn't run, it couldn't move forward, but it built the tower in a way that didn't work so that it would fall over onto the finish line. And by falling over, it reached it at a much higher height than it would if it was running. And nature does the same thing. It finds whatever works and then just keeps whatever works until something corrects it. In most cases, correcting is something going extinct. And in our case, human beings are designed with fear. We're designed with higher than average empathy and compassion notes to be able to interlock into a tribal species or a social species. And we have a very, especially in nature, we have a very high amount of pattern recognition neurons. We love to find patterns. Everything does on some level. You know, if I eat this berry, I survive. If I eat that berry, I'm sick for 6 days. I'm not going to eat the second berry. But humans in particular have a lot of those. So we look for patterns as survival mechanism because nature evolved us to kind of try and protect ourselves and find things that work in that way. And then as we built systems that were more complicated, we built our own patterns. And those patterns then kind of became something that we needed to acknowledge in turn.
Kind of became an Ouroboros.
I would say a lot of what we do is Ouroboros situation. Yes, it's all a cycle, baby.
I wanted to get back to the more on the labeling, but more to kind of answer your question. An exercise that I did once is I was shown a similar picture to this. And if I ask, if I ask you what this is.
It's a cow.
It's a cow.
What?
It's a cow.
For everybody listening at home, we are looking at a Rorschach test's weirder cousin.
I see a grenade.
You know about this?
I know about Rorschach test. That one looks weird.
You see a cow.
This is a picture.
You see a cow, right?
This is a picture of a cow.
Oh, yeah. So you knew about it beforehand.
Well, no, I mean, I've seen this. I mean, I've gone through this test before. I'm all sorry. Right, right.
No,
so it's
fine.
Kind of not fair.
Actually, I'll just leave it for you to look at.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because this is kind of what I wanted to eventually lead to, but we can jump into it now.
How dare you have structure?
I know. God. But it's like, what? You know it's a cow because you've seen it before.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it's been a long time.
But that's, so the first time you saw it, how long did it take you to realize it was a cow?
It's a cow.
It's a cow.
Yeah. I was,
but why?
My instructor was also surprised, actually, why I saw it right away as a cow.
Some
people are like me.
The people.
Weird.
I had the same experience. So I had, this probably took me a good like 3 minutes the first time I saw it to be like, this is a cow. Because it is just a picture of a cow.
Yeah. I don't know why I see this thing so easy.
Is it like the face of a cow?
Yeah.
I see it vaguely.
I look down at the.
I mean, it's like.
Look at the bottom right corner.
Okay. For those listening, not seeing this photo is all fucked up. This isn't just a photo of a cow. There's like ink bleeds.
What does that make me now?
And it's not. That's not on you. That's on the photo.
You ever seen one of those magic eye pictures? It's like that fused with the Rorschach test.
Yes, exactly.
Have you guys seen those? Well, you're not on social media. Like, they're put like.
Yeah, yeah.
With a number that you can barely see.
But like there's a whole ink splotch.
And I was like, that's eight.
It's a real picture of a couch, just like oversaturated.
Mm-hmm. And weird.
Pixelated.
And there's ink bleeds.
You pixelated,
and like
sharp cuts. But it's a psychology.
It's okay. You didn't get it. It's fine.
It's supposed to be a psychology kind of, not really a test, but identification of how you process information in front mm-hmm. of you. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I don't know why the heck I could tell those things like that. Like, I just told him that, you know how those things on social media, like, or TikTok, like, they put out this really crazy square, and then you're supposed to recognize a number.
It's like the colorblindness test.
Yeah, the colorblindness test. Yeah. And then, like, I could literally just, like,
that's because you're not colorblind.
Eight. Yeah, you got good eyes, and maybe a good visual network.
Maybe.
That's a good maybe.
Yeah, listen, I got crazy astigmatism too. It's all good.
Yeah.
Can we pause for a few seconds?
I think so, yeah.
And hit. All right, let me go back to my consciousness.